It's another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk, and I'm doing some research for my next book, which is about books, the origin of books, and sort of non-book consciousness. So I found a book. It's called Removable Type: Histories of the Book in Indian Country, 1663 to 1880, by Philip H. Round. And I'm only about 70 pages into it, but so far it's a fascinating study. One of the most telling things is a picture of a colonizer on a boat holding up a book. And this guy and the whole crew, or some crew, maybe not all on the ship, but a whole crew called the Seal of the Society for the Propagation of the Gospel. So the book gets into the whole influence of the book and initially the Bible. And that's effect on native peoples, with the history of which most people are familiar, and how that the devastation that ensued with that, and that is still playing out with the much of people's consciousness. I remember visiting the Pueblos in the Southwest in the 90s and seeing, you know, beautiful little adobe churches. I had heard later that part of the reason why the Pueblos took on the Catholicism, Christianity, whatever, I'm not sure exactly, was to basically to survive. So they kind of wore that cloak, so to speak. So I don't know the full story, but that was an interesting take on that. But anyway, that reminded me of another book, which I have not read and only glanced at. It's very intricate historical reading, by Charles Freeman, called A.D. 381, Heretics, Pagans, and the Dawn of the Monotheistic State. And I found it interesting that with all the talk nowadays about free speech, and, for example, Julian Assange having been locked up for a while, and there's talk of him going to be arrested and as a coup with the U.S. and Ecuador, new U.S. stooge president of Ecuador, and the whole thing about free speech nowadays and what one can say and not say. And there's a chapter in this book called The Swan Song of Free Speech, The Theological Orations of Gregory of Nazianzus. So I just find interesting connections of how at certain points in history, those with a certain perception that they want to enforce on other people find it their God-given duty to squelch other people from speaking the truth. One of the interesting points in the book, I'll just read a short paragraph or so. In addition, all these so-called councils, the Council of Nicaea, 325 A.D., which was where they banned the consciousness of reincarnation, and the Council of Constantinople, 381, Council of Ephesus, 431, and Chalcedon, 451, which had been subject to imperial pressures and in many cases had been unrepresentative of the church as a whole, were now given special status as ecumenical, in other words, of the whole church councils. By 600 in Rome, Pope Gregory the Great was equating these four councils with the four gospels as the cornerstones of Christian orthodoxy. But with the possible exception of Ephesus in 431, when the machinations and bribery of Cyril shaped the proceedings and led the way to his desired outcome, it was the emperors who had actually defined Christian doctrine. This definition was then incorporated into the legal system so that orthodoxy was upheld by both secular and church law, and heretics were condemned by the state. So it's an interesting little look at where this consciousness of condemning others for their free thinking comes from. And part of it, another thing to look up, is the doctrine of Christian discovery, which basically gave the Christian colonists a quote legal reason for taking the lands of Turtle Island because they were not inhabited by Christians. And that doctrine still affects some of our legal system today. And at least the current Pope has an openness to hearing about this stuff, so not only apologies, but sort of rescinding the doctrine would help on a lot of levels. But it's an interesting look, both historically and with religiosity and with the book consciousness, these kinds of things, how our minds are shaped or misshaped. So anyway, keep an open mind, and thanks for listening.